Living with Maderly. Living with Maderly. Living with Maderly. Maderly. Living with Maderly.
Hello and welcome to Series 5, Episode 11 of the podcast Living with Maderly. We take a look back at nostalgic TV shows. I'm one of the hosts. I'm Liam. The other host is Andrew Haig. Good evening, sir.
And it's going to be a good show today. That's my impression. Might be doing more of them. That's not bad, is it? I remember that guy at Chesterfield. Remember, we were playing the Chesterfield Stadium. I can't remember what you call it now. And he did that. Can you remember this? That advert he did. It's not. I can't get it anymore. Play it. He goes, I'm going to be playing Chesterfield. Really shit. Like, it's a Bowie accent. He goes, and I'm hoping to bring you some changes. So, it turned out he was a massive racist. Like, he put loads of stuff on his Facebook account about like how he hates blacks and stuff like that. So he got cancelled. So,
not do yet. Not the show. Weird one, this. I didn't even know Cracked Actor was a song until you just told me that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what you think. I think this is going to be hard to do this because I think it jumps around. There's not really a narrative. There's not loads of humour. So it's a great one for a podcast.
But just the back, if people have not watched it or don't know anything about it, it's obviously about David Bowie. It was made by Alan Yentob. First shown on BBC One on January 26, 1975 for the Omnibus series. Like I say, I said on the midweek mail, it's been repeated loads of times since. Gone down as one of the best ever BBC.
I've never heard of it. That really surprised me when you told me.
Yeah. There's loads of articles and all sorts on it. And it came
Is
up.
Is it
just
because at the time this thing was rare or hadn't happened before?
I couldn't tell you because I was same as you, and we'll get into it, but I was same as you. I was surprised. I was expecting some real sort of shocking revelations, and there weren't really any of that. But it never been made available on DVD or any streaming services, despite its, his reputation as being like a classic documentary. And that's mainly due to Bowie not liking the state he was in the film. And he said, I was so blocked, so stoned. He says it was quite the casualty case. I'm amazed I came out of that period, honest. When I see that now, I can't believe I survived it. I was so close to really throwing myself away physically, completely. And Yentob said he was fragile, exhausted, but also prepared to open up and talk in a way that he'd never talked before.
Yeah, I mean, first thing I'll say is it fragile. It looks ridiculously awful. Fragile throughout the whole thing.
He's always been a thin man, the thin white duke, as he used to call himself at one stage, but he looks ill, I think, and this throughout this documentary.
Well, I think he looks iller because he has this big, thick head of hair, so it makes him look even thinner, this big piece of hair on top of his head. But he looks painfully thin throughout. He looks exhausted. He looks drained. We start with a TV interview with him.
Yeah.
And, you can kind of see he's not with it right from the start. He doesn't want to be there.
I felt sorry for him, actually. Yeah.
I did, actually. This is the criticism he gets from the TV presenter after the event.
I'm David Bowie. Uh-huh.
Well, I'm reluctant to make the judgment about what category you fit into, and I'm hoping that you would say yes. Oh, no, I wouldn't be that pretentious, but maybe you have a feeling yourself.
No, I'm really very old-fashioned. I like moving from one area of writing or performing to another. To keep me excited, to keep me interested, to keep the people who come to see me or buy records interested and excited as well.
You didn't understand that. Don't feel badly, because I certainly didn't. David, I know you're watching tonight with the BBC film crew, and it's wonderful to have your old-fashioned entertainment around until the Beatles get back together, but it sure would be nice to talk to somebody who's not being evasive and discussing riddles.
Quite harsh to me. He's mocking him, basically.
Because the clip before, he just looked really tired. Like, he was just, whatever. I think so. I don't think he was being rude.
Yeah, we we run into quite a good song then. What I'm going to trust your music knowledge for the songs, because I quite like the first one.
Are you Rebel Rebel?
I put Ain't Got the Power.
I ain't got the power anymore. Quicksand. But he's not actually playing that live. So this thing is actually all about the Diamond Dogs tour in 1974. But the big thing about it is it comes a couple of years after the Ziggy Stardust explosion, you know, that really made his name. And the entire documentary is about him trying to get away from that, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm going to play some Yentob overdubs this year, and this is like talking about the end of the Ziggy character.
Ziggy really sang, screwed up eyes and screwed down hairdo, like a cat from Japan. Oh, you could kill him by smiling, you could leave him to hang.
Ziggy became a spectacular success, and so ironically did his alter ego David Bowie. And then at the height of his fame, in the presence of thousands of screaming fans, David Bowie killed him off.
A little thing with that clip is that he never told the band that that would be the last gig. They found out and spit like a Cilla Black sort of thing. Surprise, surprise.
surprise. But yeah, this Ziggy Stardust thing blew my mind. For anyone who's a David Bowie fan who knows, are we saying Bowie or Bowie? Which are we going with?
You say Bowie, I say Bowie.
All right.
I don't know, to be honest.
It blew my... I knew that obviously he'd released some songs under the name... Well, albums under the name Ziggy Stardust. What the kind of shocking revelation for me throughout this was that it was kind of another personality that he lived as. He spent a period of his life as Ziggy Stardust. And
yeah,
it kind of became too big for him and it took over. So it was that was him, and Bowie became the secondary character. Really, really odd.
Yeah, it is, and he really struggles with this because he does a lot of characters, obviously, even by this point. I mean,
Rory Bremner or something. Why is he all these different people?
Rory Bremner.
He's like Rory Bremner, but constantly living in character, thinking he's like John Major, or I don't know. Like,
I don't think Rory Bremner lives the character quite like
that's what I mean, yeah. But I think that's where he went wrong. Like, he did. I don't know if he's kind of got any issues, or, you know, he's obviously a very, very talented man, but I just couldn't get my head around the Ziggy Stardust thing. I still doesn't make sense to me.
Like I said, the Thin White Duke, Aladdin Sane, there's loads of like characters that he
Major
played.
Tom was one of his characters, wasn't it?
Major Tom's a Yankee. So I'm going to be doing that quite a lot, I think. I hadn't decided that, but I think I just got a feeling that's just going to happen.
Are you a character from David Bowie?
He's not really dead. Look up here, I'm in heaven. So this film is essentially like a collage, isn't it? A concert footage, and really small snippets or interview with Bowie. So
like actual music in it, isn't there? Because I, you know, obviously make notes throughout, a few notes depending on what it is we're doing. But yeah, there was loads of it where I was just watching like 5 or 6 minute song, thinking there's not really much to say about this.
And this is why I was quite surprised that it seemed such a revolution. Maybe, like you say, maybe this wasn't done in the 70s in the way that it is now, where you get behind the scenes stuff. Because there's some good bits from Bowie, absolutely no doubt about it. But the majority of the documentary is the music side, which is why I enjoyed it, because I love Bowie. I know you're not as huge on him.
I'm guessing, and again, this is something we might come back to at the end as a conclusion, but I think possibly it's because when we've had access to pop stars and rock stars before, it's all glamorous, sticking their tongues out. Hey, look how great this is. And this was actually showing a man who was, like we said, very fragile, like broken, really. And I think maybe that's what was so unusual, to see that everybody thinks he's this kind of, you know, superstar living everybody's dreams. And actually he's living quite a sad life, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously did Elton in this series, and we saw it different with me. I don't think Elton were anywhere near. But I imagine this is what Elton were like in the 70s, though. Like, sort of close.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think is exhausting, isn't it? I think that's the thing. And I think he's clearly struggling with putting to bed this Ziggy character, that he actually had to kill him off, which I think he sings Ziggy Stardust songs. He did sing Ziggy Stardust songs.
Yeah.
He never became Ziggy Stardust again, did he?
No, that were it. Got rid of the band who did that as well. A lot of the live band anyway. The concert footage, I think, is incredible. We're not going to go through every song that he plays and stuff, but I want to play a little bit. Yeah, I thought this was a brilliant version of a Sweet Thing from Diamond Dogs.
Don't
And isn't it me putting pain in a stranger, like a portrait in furniture, trails on a leash. Will you see
the whole thing is, and I suppose it's all driven by this Bowie who plays several different characters throughout his life. It's all over the place. Some of his music I really like. Some of it I think is truly awful. I think the way that he's, you know, it's a bit later on that we come to when it shows some of his different looks. It's crazy. It is.
I mean, this show looks, I think it looks incredible. It's like, it is proper theatre. It's not like we've done Morrissey, we've done obviously Oasis, we've done, I don't know what else we've covered in these, like music wise, I think we've done Queen or whatever. None of them have got a show like this where he's always, I don't know if you notice, he's always in like different parts of the stage, like on like a roof and then like
some scaffolding at one bit. Yeah,
yeah, some scaffolding. He's always like, and he's always in completely different clothes and it's the same gig. And you're thinking, what the fucking hell's going on?
Yeah, he's kind of, you know, it's mentioned that he started off doing mime and that's prominent. He says actually, and I might be saying this a little bit early, but he does say that he never thought his voice was good enough, so he kind of thought he had to bring more to the party, and that's why he does
Yeah, I think that were really interesting, that, to be fair. But the first thing that I found really interesting about the whole thing is how he gets his lyrics and stuff, which I've read about this before, but I've seen it.
Crazy, that, yeah. I mean, sorry, just before that, just something to mention there is that, do you think does he make up these little anecdotes? Like, just twice he does it. He's drinking. It made me laugh because he's obviously, you know, mega rich rock star. Well, I'm guessing he is. I don't know. But he's drinking milk from a low fat carton in the back of a taxi. And it's like cheap looking $1 milk. And they say to him, how do you feel? And you make me feel like a natural woman's playing in the background.
Yeah.
And that must be Yentob's choice, I'm assuming. But
yeah,
they say, how do you feel? And he says, oh, there's a fly in this milk. And that's how I feel in here in America. It's like...
Yeah,
I don't know. It seems a very forced kind of. He was drinking out the milk a minute ago, and now there's a fly in it, and that's how he is in America. But yeah, in the milk. That's how he feels.
Obviously, he's this extravagant stage performer, and I like you say, I think from the very start, which is that's the first thing he says. Basically, you can say this is a man who's not. He's not. I don't think he's with it, is he? At all. He don't. He's not like a. I won't say he's like a druggie where you see, oh my god, he's out of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've seen some stuff with Sid Vicious where he falls asleep in an interview and stuff like that because he's that hammered. But it's not that. It's more, I don't know, he reminds me of someone who's like literally on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
He's just, he seems completely burnt out. He's on his way to a wax museum to record a music video. That, I found that all really odd. I mean, some old celebrities in there, but I was sure there. I wrote down he's got a wig on. Definitely a wig. But then did you see it a bit afterwards where he's laid down and it looks like he's crying. He's asking for some tissues for his eyes. And he's rubbing his hair. It's definitely not a wig. He's got an incredible head of hair.
Brilliant head of hair. And he's got brilliant eyes as well. I think we might have mentioned before that he's got different coloured eyes, haven't he?
Yeah, yeah. But then, this is coming to a bit you mentioned. But then, so in the music video for this, I don't know which song it is he's playing actually, but it's coming up with lyrics on scraps of paper. And I thought, this is a bit odd. Well, that's really weird. And then it comes to how he writes a lot of his songs. I mean, do you want to try and describe it?
So, well, I think what he sort of does is he writes a diary. Not necessarily I felt like this today, just thoughts and phrases or whatever. And then he cuts them all up and sees and like sort of puts them together. And what we get here is Moon Age Daydream, which is off Ziggy Stardust. And he starts, I'm an alligator. I'm a mama papa coming for you. I'm a space invader. I'll be a rock and roll bitch for you. And I've always thought about his lyrics. I could never hope to match Bob Dylan or Morrissey, but I can sort of see where they come from, if you know what I mean. If I had that talent to write like that, I've always thought with Bowie's lyrics, where's this come from? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I mean, it's not completely random, but yeah, it's just crazy. It's just writing down a load of thoughts and then just muddling them all up into. I mean, they often don't make sense. And now all of a sudden, when I'm listening, I think, oh, that's why he's obviously just pulled two different phrases together.
It's mad. I mean, I've written a couple down that like really stick with me from Bowie's. Obviously, Life on Mars, when he goes, it's on a merry cow's tortured brow. that Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. And you think, what is that? And then there's a, and you know, Ziggy Stardust, the song where he goes, Ziggy really sang screwed up eyes and screwed down hairdo, like some cat from Japan. Just mad.
Have you ever kept a diary?
I've never kept a diary, no. No.
Well, I don't think I have, but if I have, I've never written in it, I'm an alligator, I'm a mama papa.
Have you ever heard, what about my brain hurts like a warehouse? But this is one of my favourite. I'm just going to play a really short clip here. This is not from the documentary, but this is one of my favourite lyrics from it. I remember when I first, I went with Brendan, our mate, we mentioned it the last three episodes now, actually, and I bought Hunky Dory album, we were playing it, and he said this bit, and we were laughed for about an hour about it.
And my brother lays upon the rocks. He could be dead, he could be not, he could be you. He's chameleon, comedian, Corinthian, and caricature.
Yeah, obviously it makes sense when you know it's just jumbled up words now, but
so
hold on then, let me get my head around this timeline, because I thought he'd finished with Ziggy Stardust by this time.
Yeah, so he finished with Ziggy Stardust, but it was still
playing. Did you just say that one album is, that song he's just written is off Ziggy Stardust?
That's not the song he's wrote, though. They put that together as a, do you know what I mean? Because Moon Age Daydream is off the one before. They just obviously put that together as a, I don't think he were putting those words together, if you know what I mean. I think they just sort of,
right,
you know, put it. I could be wrong, but unless he's lying.
So next bit after that, this is another one of them things where I kind of, things confuse me and it blows my mind. So I thought he'd invented Frank Spencer. I thought, but is he actually doing a Frank Spencer impression? Is he?
I.
Do you know the bit? So he's in the back of the car.
Yeah. Because,
and I thought, God, that's mental. Like, I wonder if they saw that and thought, hey, we could do a character like that.
But
actually, it did come out this year, so I think potentially he is doing a Frank Spencer then.
But you remember it, this is what I'm about to say. He's in America though, so he won't have seen. You know,
it's a pure coincidence then that he's doing a Frank Spencer.
I don't know if if someone sent him a video, a VHS of Frank Spencer and said, "Seen this?" And Bowie loves his comedy. Bowie,
there'd be no VHS in '73, would there?
I don't know, to be honest, but he might have got it though. They might have played it on American TV, and he thought, "Oh my God, this is amazing."
It's either a massive coincidence that he does a perfect Frank Spencer impression.
Frank Skinner, that would be impressive.
If he did an impression of Frank Skinner doing his '90s comedy,
welcome to fantasy football. I don't know, I'm a cockney, but yeah, I don't know. It is weird. Yeah, it is weird. I do know what you mean. To be honest, I thought, I've not wrote it down, but I did think he must have seen Frank Spencer, but as you've said, obviously it came out that year. I don't know, maybe that's another thing we should give him.
Was it an instant hit? Like, would everybody know of it straight away?
That might have been him. Another one of his chameleon, comedian, Corinthian.
It was Michael Ball playing Frank Spencer. That was another one of his characters, yeah.
It turns out he played. He's just done loads of things that we didn't know about. Like, I don't know, he's Jim Royal.
Wolfie Smith.
Absolutely brilliant.
Next song that we hear there is one of the classics. It's Changes, and it's going through his looks. And this is crazy. Like,
do you know what? I'm going to shock you even more, I think, here. How many years do you think these looks go through?
I mean, there must be 30 or 40. So you must be talking, I'm trying to think how old he is. What would he be? Mid-20s. There must be 6 or 7 years worth there, maybe 8.
It's 5 years worth anyway of... And I can't put into words how completely different. I mean, it doesn't even look like the same man. It's
No, there are bits early on. I didn't realise it was him. And then I thought, hold on a minute, are these all him? And sometimes it's like he's got straight hair, then he's got fuzzy hair. Sometimes he looks really serious and he's got like sort of gingery hair and then he's got black hair. They're completely different looks, aren't they? It's like, what was his name? He used to go into the shop and check. Mr. Ben, was it? He used to go and have like an adventure in a different outfit.
It's and obviously, like you say, in the background, I mean, this became one of his ultimate songs. It wasn't even a big hit, to be quite, it wasn't a hit at all, in fact, when it first came out, Changes. But obviously, because of the way he was, like, and he's, the way he changed his thing, that became like almost his theme tune, didn't it? Changes. It's another one where he sings really weird.
It's another one where I kind of wish people would tell him, you're a decent singer, just sing more. Like, I don't know why he talks in a lot of his songs.
My favourite bit of any sort of, like, in terms of why he sung that, I'd love to know why he sung it like this, is Space Oddity, when he goes, it's a really serious song, like, My wife, tell my wife I love her very much. She now.
Yeah.
You're singing it like that. He's on about, he's never going to see his family again because he's lost in space. She now.
They played that in this, and I was going to mention it. I was going to, yeah. At some point, I'm not sure where it is, but they do say, they do use that in the background.
Yeah, they do. They play the full song, and there's nothing happening. It's just him on stage, but he's not singing. It's like quite an arty film, isn't it? Yen Tob here trying to. I don't know, going for the awards, isn't he, I reckon?
Yeah, he sticks around on the music. There's lots of background and the history. I mean, it's almost, this bit's a bit almost like a tribute to him, as if he's kind of finished, but he's only in his mid-20s by then.
27 he is, which I'll get onto later. But he said that he used to play saxophone and he had a choice of being in a jazz band or being in a rock band, but he chose rock because he likes writing. And he said it was the only thing you were good at school, not grammatically, but creating stories. And I think he's probably completely right with that. And there's some Bowie fans, aren't there, who'd say he intentionally keeps his personality a mystery. And there's another fan on later who says he's not from Earth, he's from the Bowie universe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's got some very cultish fans, hasn't he? And yeah, there's a bit here. I don't know how funny it actually is, but it made me laugh that I'm going to play where. This is like, it's almost like he's arguing with his multiple personalities, is how many times he tells us that things are all Japanese.
This is likewise another Japanese costume. These are all Japanese, and most of this stuff is Japanese. Most of my clothes are Japanese. I have.
It reminds me of David Brent. Can I go to work today, David? Yes, you can, Dave. Can I stay in bed today, David? That's not me in bed with another man called David.
Is it all Japanese, David?
Have you ever heard David Brent? Ricky Gervais's band, what were they called? Shona Dancer, what were they called?
I thought it was Foregone Conclusion, but was that an
earlier? No, like before he were famous.
Can't remember.
He sounds exactly like Bowie, basically. I mean, he even sings like Bowie. He's being serious. He's like, you're coming down. I remember Paul Merton saying, David Bowie needs all your stuff.
He did a couple of all right songs, didn't he? And he kind of looked the part early on, Mr. Gervais.
Yeah.
But,
this
is a bit now where he tells us about how he does his three-dimensional stuff because he's not confident in his voice. He looks absolutely exhausted. He asks how long till he goes out on stage. A bit like the Elton thing where he just looks like, God, it's the worst thing I want to do. This is mad, though, this. And this is where, you know, and I get it, people love him and he's clearly a genius, but I just found this really odd. He comes on stage, there's a hand opening with a really loud alarm going, wah, wah, wah. And then he does a bit of singing and there's like a clicking noise. Do you know like them wind-up teeth that chatter that comes in the background? Mm. It really is like art, like a piece of art rather than a song. And I just thought, God, I would hate to go and see that. It's just not...
It's like a piece of art, and I'd hate to go and see that. I think one of the worst things is in any Bowie song is The Man Who Sold the World. With that, and I can't, what the fuck's that instrument called? You know what I mean? That all the way through it.
Yeah, like click it. It's not a nice noise, is it? That like clicking noise.
Why? Every time I listen to it, I think, who thought? Do you know what this needs? And I'm convinced that's why people think Nirvana version's better, just purely because of that.
Get rid of that.
Not me. But yeah, there's a bit here actually about half an hour in now already, because obviously, like I say, a lot of it's concert footage, but this is how frightening he finds success. So this is just like when he says, like, it's been like being in a car where you're in back and you're not in control.
Yeah, clearly this is a man who's, he's not kind of loving life at the moment, is he? He feels out of control. And yeah, I mean, it shows you, doesn't it, when because he finishes the concert, and they just sort of whisk him straight off into a car and he's gone. And you can see that, I don't know, seemingly there's not much chance to actually enjoy life on the road. You just rushed from one place to another. Maybe there's loads of good bits that they're not showing us in this, but it looks very stressful.
I think the difference between this one, by the way, there's not a lot of to enjoying life on the road. It's a shit film.
Life on the road, yeah. It's just a joke
in there.
I love the bit where everyone randomly likes him after randomly hating him for no reason.
So anyway, it's not about him, it's about Bowie. And I think the difference between this one and the Elton John one, and this is probably possibly how it's filmed, I think he's totally alone, Bowie. Elton John, he's making banter with people, and even Morrissey, who's renowned as being like this, he's got Nancy Sinatra coming round to see him, and do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
This is just pure him in a room.
And he does look like such a kind of a little boy, like just because of what he's wearing and how he sits. Mm. And Yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah, I think that is it. That's the sadness, isn't it? He's on his own all the way through.
He's certainly not playing tennis, is he? Saying, you fucking vile pigs, or whatever. You vile pig, she knows. He says that the character Ziggy were a monster. He said it grew out of proportion and overshadowed everything. And you can tell he's lost who he is. And
this, well, he says there's a bit that he plays, obviously pulling his words together again. It's Ziggy Stardust on stage. He was a Naz with God-given ass.
Yeah,
I got the feeling, is there some... Is there some darkness there? Was Ziggy a monster? And he sort of pauses and looks quite sad and says he certainly was, as if like, yeah, that was a really kind of dark period for him. What was the...
He had absolutely no... I mean, before Ziggy Stardust, he wasn't big at all. He'd had one hit, Space Oddity, I think in 69, and he were a one-hit wonder, because up until 74, I think Ziggy Stardust come out, nothing. He were releasing stuff, Hunky Dosh, and brilliant songs, but they never hit the charts, and like no one knew who he were. And then Ziggy Stardust come out, and it was like, fucking hell, I'm the biggest rock star, arguably, in the world.
I just find it odd how he kind of didn't sort of step away from him, for the character. He had to kill him off, because it had become that... He'd kind of taken over him, and
I think this is probably the most interesting bit for me, that one of the fans in it, and we don't see much from the fans, but one of the fans in it says he sees a lot of Jimi Hendrix in Ziggy Stardust. And Hendrix were getting that big that his manager were pumping him full of drugs just to get him out on stage, and eventually it killed him. And Bowie says that the idea was that Ziggy was going to be the ultimate rock star that went too far and couldn't survive. And obviously the irony to it is that it pretty much killed Bowie, because Bowie became the ultimate rock star. He didn't know Ziggy were going to be as big as... He was just a character that happened to blow up.
I know you're not a Ziggy Stardust expert, but did he live as Ziggy then, or did he just perform as Ziggy? Because I got the feeling that for a couple of years he lived as Ziggy Stardust.
I think, like, certainly in the public eye, yeah. I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, obviously on stage and stuff like that as well. I mean, he says himself, he talks a couple of times about schizophrenia, don't he?
Yeah.
Like in passing. But I think there might be a bit of it in him. And he says that he didn't understand that the characters he was creating were actually him, which is bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, well, he says, doesn't he, there's a bit where, because obviously on stage he changes a lot, and he says, you know, every time he's a new outfit, basically he's a new version of himself.
Mm.
And there were times when he wasn't sure which was kind of the real one, and that whether Bowie had become like a character act, which must really be so confusing to kind of be in that space, yeah.
Well, he talks like as if Ziggy is a person, and he's him.
Does he know that he's a character? Because sometimes he speaks as if it's character, and sometimes he speaks as if that is actually him.
He talks about how he's constantly trying to get rid of the Ziggy character, but he's always following me around. And it's like, I love Bowie, I absolutely love Bowie, but I'm not an expert. He's not one of the people that I'm proper clued up on. So people who are massive Bowie fans might be able to say more here, but he never went back to that Ziggy character, but no. I'd like to know how long it haunted him for, if you know what I mean.
I mean, he seemed, and obviously you only see a very small part of people, he seemed to be much more in control in the later years, I would say. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he seemed a lot happier in his later years. I mean, there were a lot of drugs going around. I mean, after this, he did Low and Heroes and stuff like that with Brian Eno, and by sounds of it, it was just fucking drug central. They went to Berlin and just got, like, literally, like, fucking cocaine heaven. I don't think this is like the sort of drugs like that here, because he's not wild here at all.
Well, I didn't know if kind of behind the scenes, if he's taking stuff and then to do the interviews, he's having to take downers to bring it back down. And that's why you're getting this kind of almost stoned looking version of him. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's needs people with far more intelligence than us to get to the bottom of it, I'm sure.
Yeah. But there's a great version of this bit, actually, of Rock and Roll Suicide off the Ziggy Stardust album. I'll play a little bit here. But what I found interesting in this is, as it was being played, it shows you a montage of all the people who died young. So you've got Jimi Hendrix rock world, sorry. So you've got Jimi Hendrix.
Janis Joplin's on there.
Janis Joplin, Brian Jones is in there. I'll just play a little bit of the clip anyway.
Somebody's accelerating very, very fast and you're not driving, and you get that thing in your chest when you're being forced backwards, and you think, oh, and you're not sure whether you like it or not. It's that kind of feeling. That's what success was like, the first thrust of being totally unknown to being what seemed to be very quickly known. It was very frightening for me, and coping with it was something that I tried to do. And that's what happened. That was me coping. Some of those albums were me coping, taking it all very seriously, and I was.
But what's interesting is they're all from the famous 27 Club, the infamous 27 Club. You've heard of that before?
Yeah.
Kurt Cobain, Jim Morrison, all died at 27. Bowie were 27 at the time of this recording. So I don't know if, like, because he mentions all this sort of stuff, is he thinking? I don't know if he's thinking of committing suicide, but is he thinking? I mean, he's amazed he survived that period.
Yeah, I don't know. It's quite dark to think about, isn't it?
Time takes a cigarette, puts it in your mouth. You pull on your finger, then another finger. Learn the cigarette.
Just to lighten the mood a bit, let's have a go at Mike Parry when he on the quiz he thought what the next line to that was.
Have a listen to this song.
Time takes a cigarette, puts it in your mouth.
Yes. I want you to sing the next line or say the next line.
What?
Can you not say the next line of the song? A very famous song.
Can I hear that again, please?
Can you hear it again?
Time takes a cigarette, puts it in your mouth.
It's such a small snippet of a song that I reckon the next line was, but the world has blown up, everything is going south. What's your problem?
I still think the best ever Mike Parry, like, lyrics wrong is, if you want my body and you think I'm smooshing, come on baby, open wide.
Yeah, brilliant. I think it's if you want to smooch me and you think I'm groovy or something.
That's like that. If you want to smooch me and you think I'm groovy, come on baby, open wide. Mike Parry fans, we've got a treat for you coming up, by the way, in the next.
Yeah,
next.
We are going to get to it, definitely.
But basically, we've done the documentary.
I put really good vocals in that one, because I thought that was fantastic. Oh, yeah. There's a weird bit here where, because I think, and I know nothing about it, so you might know, you might not, but I think the Ziggy Stardust album was a kind of a story, wasn't it? About,
yeah.
I read up a tiny bit, an alien comes to Earth to save the world. There's no music on his planet or something. And
yeah.
But then there's like a really weird voiceover where Bowie's doing it, and it's sort of skimming over the Earth almost. And he's saying that everybody flees. There are fleas the size of rats and rats the size of
but
cats.
But that's not... That's a different album. You're right with the Ziggy Stardust story, but that's the beginning of the Diamond Dogs album, what you're talking about, the voiceover. Yeah.
Why does that... The whole thing's very jumbled to me. Why was that bit played in there, do you think?
I'm not sure. That were the album that were coming out, or were out, or whatever at that time. That album were actually going to be based around the book 1984. There's a song on it called 1984.
It just threw me a bit. I thought, what? Well, you know, we've been watching some of his songs and then we got this really weird, almost like War of the Worlds type thing. And then, and then he's
it's not one of my favourite albums, that one, to be honest, Diamond. It's got some good songs on it, but it's not one of my favourites. So I'm not too clued up on it, but
he's back out on stage. He's completely changed again. He looks a bit like Mick Jagger in this to me. And like, not only how he looks, but how he's strutting about and moving. He's becoming Mick Jagger now. And then there's a bit. We mentioned it earlier, so I don't know if you want to play the clip or just mention it, but it ends in a really, really funny way.
It's the weirdest ending. Fuck it, we'll play the clip, because people might think we're exaggerating. This is how the documentary ends.
So David Bowie becomes a soul singer.
I'm only dancing.
Yeah, and that is the last piece of dialogue. We get a little bit more music after that, and you assume something's going to come back in.
There's a good soul version of John Amoni dancing. But yeah, basically you see him just rehearsing with some soul singers for literally about 5 seconds, and he goes, and then something like he was a soul singer. That's it.
And I was looking, thinking, have I missed something here? Like, is there an ending to it that I've missed? which again, you know, obviously Jens Hobbs very well renowned. He's done some fantastic stuff. I can't really tell you what he's done, if I'm honest, but I know he's very well thought of.
Yeah.
But this, I don't know. I say this was so well thought of, I don't get it. It's not that it's bad. It wasn't a bad way to spend 50 minutes. And it did make me think, oh, yeah, I could listen to a couple of Bowie songs, actually.
That's the best thing I can say for it, is that I watched it, and then because we've done this one really quick, and I watched it, and then I've been listening to Bowie all day today because he's got me into it. I mean, the period he went on after this, this is like the glam rock period, if you like. It became like a plastics, where he classed it as plastic soul, and he did, Young Americans. Young Americans.
Yeah.
And Fame. That one.
How many sort of reinventions did he do, or is it too hard to say?
I've absolutely no idea off the top of my head. I mean, started off as the spaceman, obviously, or whatever. Ground control to Major Tom. And then he went, I don't know what he was, Man Who Sold the World, really. I mean, like I say, I'm not like a huge expert. Then obviously Ziggy. Then he became like a lad insane. Diamond Dogs were a completely different thing. It was supposed to be 1984. Then he became like a soul singer. Then he became the Thin White Duke, which I love, the Thin White Duke. And then he went on his ambient stage with Brian Eno and doing drugs in Berlin. Then he became Disco King with, you know, Let's Dance. And then he's fucking
iterations of him, aren't they? He's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, then he did heavy rock with Tim Machine in the 90s. Ridiculous how many times he invented himself.
I mean, he's clearly unbelievably talented, isn't he? Like, you know, I don't love everything that he's done. I'm not his biggest fan. Like I've said, some of it I actually find really unpleasant to listen to. But I think to be able to do all these different kind of genres and have hits in them all, really, really talented man.
Well, I've got something for you, Liam. So we knew this one was going to be a fairly short one, because a lot of it is concert footage. And what I'd say is, if you like Bowie, absolutely watch this. I enjoyed it because I love Bowie. If you're not a fan of Bowie, you're not going to get anything out of this, I don't think.
No, because there's no, you know, and probably showed in the episode, there's no real great humorous moments to get hold of, really, is there? It's some songs and a guy who's not very happy. That's it.
Yeah, really good performer and a guy who's not happy. But we're going to have a little bit of a game here, Liam. There's a fantastic website called Sup Bowie, and it's about what was David Bowie up to at your age. So I'll type your age in now, 40. Yeah. You want to know what David Bowie were doing? David Bowie, at age 40, was co-starring with Tina Turner in a Pepsi commercial.
Wow.
Any other ages that are old? I don't know. I mean, have you got any more ages that are special to you?
Yeah, what was he doing when 30? What was he up to?
30 years old, David Bowie was singing in a completely self-invented language on the 1977 album Low on Subterraneans, a decade before it was popularized by the Cocteau Twins.
What about when he was 50? And then in 10 years' time, we'll have a look and see if I'm in the same position.
He created the Bowie Bonds Financial Security, back with royalties from his pre-1990 work. He issued the bonds in 1997 and earned £55 million from the sale. The rights to his back catalogue were returned to him when the bonds matured in 2007. Businessman. Business time.
Did he finish mega rich then? I suppose a bit like Elton, when you've got the back catalogue that people are going to keep buying, you must generate income year after year. So he must have died a very, very rich man.
I'll just while you're on it, David Bowie net worth. Net worth £230 million, it says.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
Not bad. Do you want to do one more age before you go, Liam? What should we say? Do you want to do the age of it? What else you were up to in this year?
27. What do you mean? Oh, when this was being filmed?
Yeah.
See.
This is not on the documentary. Apparently, he moonwalked before Michael Jackson did on this tour. And there's this footage of it.
His move. Wow.
Yeah. So he did the moonwalk as well. So everything. That was Frank Spencer.
Jacko, he stole Paul McCartney's songs and he stole Bowie's moonwalk.
Unbelievable.
It's not going to go down well, is it, with Garcia Hernandez?
No, it's not. But yeah, so he invented Frank Spencer, invented the moonwalk, and invented singing Ta-tai! Uh-huh.
Last week I called her scratching the wallpaper over there, and when I told her to stop, she did a whoopsie in my mirror.
Yeah, so we did it. We did a difficult episode there, I thought, just purely because not actually that much to say about it, but yeah, we got through it. Last episode, do you want to hit them with the facts?
Well, we've not talked about him for a while, and we feel it's time to bring him back. We're going to cover the full Madeley and the Squatters. I'm looking forward to this. I've never seen the full thing. We've got a surprise, a Mike Parry special surprise coming up as well. So it's not the end, but the final of the actual series. We're going back to Madeley.
Yeah, and it's on YouTube, is it?
Yeah. Madeley meets the Squatters.
For anyone who's been with us since the start, we played some clips from this on the very first episode. We've not touched it since, and to be honest, I think that first episode we probably need to remove or redo or do something with. I think, not sure. We'll watch this space.
Changes.
If anyone wants to get in touch with us, send us anything. Find us on Twitter at livingwithmade1, or you can send us an email at livingwithmadeley@outlook.com.